What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Get ready to take notes, because school is now in session. Tackling the biggest issues in education, this is Education America. Save the classroom, save the country. Here are your hosts, Headmaster Rebecca Hagstrom and co-host Abigail Johnson.
Hey, teacher, leave the kids alone.
Welcome to Education America, where we're working to save the classroom so that we can save the country. K-12 education is the playing field where the battle is on for the future of our country. And as the 16th President, Abraham Lincoln, succinctly stated, the philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next. How true that is.
It is.
Nice to see you again, Abigail.
Good to see you, Rebecca.
Yeah, we're going to have a little interesting conversation, just the two of us tonight.
I know. I'm excited.
Yeah, we have so many wonderful guests, and sometimes it's hard to even get them all scheduled and fit them all in. And today we decided we're going to take a little break from guests and have a conversation, actually a continuing conversation, right?
Yes.
About a book that we've brought up a few times. You can go ahead and introduce our audience to
yes.
that book.
Yes. So tonight we're going to revisit the 2018 book, The Coddling of the American Mind. And I have heard from some of our listeners who have heard previous shows, and they all kind of said it's worth revisiting.
Mm-hmm.
So we won't be repeating past conversations, just so you know. We are going to focus on the topic that's addressed in the book. It's called Paranoid Parenting, or otherwise we all know them as helicopter parents.
Yes. Or as my administrative team has read, that another new term is actually lawnmower parents.
Oh my gosh.
So imagine helicopter versus lawnmower. There's quite a difference. Thankfully, we don't have lawnmower parents at Liberty. So
yes.
I'm very grateful for that.
Yes. But what I think will be very interesting about this conversation too is, you parented in a different time than I am parenting. And I'm very mm-hmm. curious to see how our perspectives have changed, mm-hmm. Over the years, because I think that's something that the book really chats about, is basically saying that children who grew up in earlier years, so basically I'd say late age millennials and older, had a lot more unsupervised free time
mm-hmm.
than younger generations. So again, they call them like the I generation or Generation Z. So basically he's making the case that, in part, some of these rising issues that we're seeing in our society, in part, are a result of how we have over-parented
mm-hmm.
our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes into just a really thorough discussion of that. And I found it fascinating.
Mm-hmm. It is fascinating. And, you made the point earlier that we were raising our children at different points in time, which is true. My children are all grown now. But even comparing my own childhood experience with how I raised my children
mm-hmm.
versus what we're seeing today. I mean, back when I was a young child, we roamed the neighborhood.
Yep.
I mean, and we lived in town. It was a small town
a quiet, nice town along the river, the St. Croix River. But our parents didn't worry about us. They knew that we were going to be parented by whichever parents we happened to be in the yard of or in the house of at any given time. And there happened to be a church and a vacant parking lot near one of our homes, near our home, actually. And so we spent a lot of time in that parking lot riding our bikes and making forts in the woods or in the bushes next to it. And we would ride our bikes downtown to the Ben Franklin, and we would get penny candy. And that was right on Main Street.
Yep.
And our parents never worried about us biking downtown and doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And today, I think because we do have these heightened fears of safety for our children, people are much less willing to let their children take their bikes and ride into town and get penny, well, it's hard to get penny candy anymore, but, you know, even go to get an ice cream cone or what have you. And mm-hmm. So there has been, and I know, you know, in some cases, in some respects, there's some validation to this, right? I mean, I remember that when my oldest son was in elementary school, it was when Jacob Wetterling was abducted and never found until just, I think, in the last, what, 5-10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And That had a chilling effect,
yes,
on people's willingness to let their children out of their sight.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say it affected me. I remember telling my son, because he would go out to the bus stop at that time, and I couldn't see him at the bus stop. And I would tell him, you know, now if you are approached by anybody, you need to get on that bike and ride home. And, you know, you had to have conversations with your kids that you wouldn't have wanted to have. And I do think that in some respects, that has been a big chilling effect on people's willingness to let their children venture out. But those stories, in all reality, are quite rare. It's kind of like airplane crashes. You hear about them, they're frightening, and it does make some people afraid to fly. But most people overcome their willingness or their fear, and they're going to go fly anyway, mm-hmm. right? But when it comes to your children, you're much less willing to take that risk.
Yes.
And therefore, we run into this whole notion of, well, I'm going to try to protect my child from every single risk that there is.
Yep.
Which is impossible. And it actually isn't good for them because...
Yes.
Because it leads to what?
And this was, mm-hmm. in all honesty, you know, I have kids that for a long time, I was the mother of babies and toddlers. Mm-hmm. And it has been a very, very odd thing for me to, while I do still have young children, they are not babies anymore. Mm-hmm. And they are not toddlers anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And they are in these ages where that they're talking about in the book, where realistically you could start to let go a little bit. And I went, I really don't like that. Let's not talk about that. I mean, not my kids, right? Like, you guys out there, you do this with your kids. And so in all honesty, I've been, you know, this was a great reflection point of, okay, and why? Because the point that he makes in the book, like so many things, is problem solving, resilience, and independence are like muscles.
Mm-hmm.
You are not going to be able to go into the gym right off the street and deadlift 220. You're going to have to go into the gym and lift 5-pound weights and then 10-pound weights and then 50-pound weights. And you need to go and you need to have lots of repetition. And that is how then you're able to do this great feat. And so our role as parents is to prepare children to go out into the world and be problem solvers, be resilient, and be independent. But we're not actually in our society now preparing our kids to do that, because to do that, we need to let them experience hardship, frustration, being told no, but also being unsupervised, because that allows them to problem solve.
Mm-hmm.
In the book, various interviews I've watched now with the author, he compares it to a wine glass. And he said, you know, when we're looking at, we want to raise anti-fragile kids. What does that mean? If you have a wine glass on the table, you do not give it to a toddler. Because you know that thin glass, if he knocks it over, it will fall to the floor and it will shatter into a million pieces. So what do? We give toddlers sippy cups. Mm-hmm. They're made out of plastic. You can chuck them against the wall and nothing's going to happen.
And they even make them now so that they don't spill when they turn them upside down. Which, my kids would just dump them upside down and out came the milk or the water or whatever was in them, just poured all over their trays. And they liked that.
Yeah. But when you only give your kid, but you have to then gradually increase your child's exposure. So that they do eventually, the goal is you do not want your 20-year-old using a sippy cup. You know, you want your 20-year-old to have the muscle and the discernment.
And you don't want your 25-year-old living at home.
Yes, you do not want that. You want them to go out, but you can't just, you know, when they're a senior in high school, you say, okay, well, great. Now you're on your own. Good luck. But you've paid all their bills. You've taken care of all of their homework problems. They've never had to advocate for themselves and they've never been alone to make a mistake or to maybe have someone be mean to them.
Yeah.
And again, I'm thinking of this from a parental perspective of, well, I don't want my child to experience someone being mean. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but that's part of learning how to deal with that is these little doses. He also compares it to the immune system.
Yeah.
And we have all seen this now over the past 3 years. You know, when people came out of lockdown and you'd only been around your family and you'd maybe not been anywhere for a significant period of time, what happened when you began to reintroduce other people in new situations into your life again? People got sick. And they got sick a lot because their immune system, in order for your immune system to thrive, it needs constant exposure to viruses, bacteria, germs. Mm-hmm. That's why there's actually a lot of good studies on things like antibacterial wipes are actually not very helpful.
Right. They're harmful.
Because it's taking away the stressor. Mm-hmm. And again, mild stressor. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about bullying or true trauma or true
sickness.
But
to your point, that is actually one of the problems is that because parents seek often, and especially in this whole realm of helicopter parenting, often parents are seeking to protect their children from any sort of pain, whether that be academic pain, whether that be physical pain, whether that be emotional pain. And by doing so, they're actually creating these children who don't have the ability to stand up against anything. Mm-hmm. And often you'll hear in various circles that, well, my child was being bullied. But when you hear what really happened, often that's just normal childhood behavior where they just need to figure out how to work things out together. Yes. And they can't have a parent rushing in or a teacher rushing in and solving the problem every single time, or they don't learn those skills.
Yes.
And granted, to your point, if there's, you know, full on bullying, then obviously that needs to be addressed.
Yes.
But I think there's this notion of the creeping of the meaning of words. And I hear parents using the term bullying more frequently than they did 20 years ago.
Yes.
And often when I dig into what that really means, it's not necessarily real bullying behavior. It's just not a child not being nice.
Yep.
And just because a child's not being nice doesn't mean they are bullying. And I think what we have to do is help people kind of reset their expectations of, okay, part of the reason why children are children is because they're learning how to navigate life. They're learning how to get along with others. They're learning how to learn. And all of these things, as you point out, take practice.
Yes.
And so if you protect a child from any type of negative interaction with another peer, then you're never going to teach your child to negotiate, to figure out how to befriend that child. Maybe your child is demonstrating some antisocial behavior that you're not even aware of, and you're just going to rush in and judge this other child for being a bully when maybe they're just responding to your child's antisocial type behavior. And so all of this has to be practiced in the context of school. And home, if you have siblings, you know, obviously, when you have siblings, you have four, I
have
four.
To tell you, we're at an epic level right now.
They're
at
practicing
home.
A lot right now,
I will say,
their skills.
There's been an awful lot of, mommy does not want to hear about this anymore. You need to go and figure this out because I can tell you're just tattling now.
Yep.
This isn't a chronic thing where, you know, it's an egregious violation of our family values or whatever.
Right.
It's I don't like this. I think this was kind of mean. Okay, well, then did you go and talk to so-and-so about it? Because that would be the person that you need to go use your words and go talk to that person about it. Mm-hmm. And you need to figure it out by yourselves.
Oh, my gosh. And it's so good that you're doing that because, as I pointed out, there are a lot of parents who don't want to do that. They want to jump in and they want to protect. They might be more willing to do it at home with their own children. But mm-hmm. if their children are involved in something at school, they're less likely to allow that to play out. Mm-hmm. And I think that, again, we just have to try to pull back and take a, you know, thousand foot look
yes.
at what is happening and resist that temptation to, you know, A, also overschedule our kids so that they never have any free time to yes. know what to do. Why are they bored the instant they don't have something going on in their lives? Mm-hmm. Why do they quick turn to their phones if they're older,
yep.
you know, because they don't have anything going on? Well, it's because if they're overscheduled all the time, they literally don't know what to do with downtime.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
And so we have to start being intentional about scheduling downtime for yes. the kids. And, you know, I know our rule in our family's house was one sport per season or one activity per season.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have them running to various, you know, team sports. You know, if they were on a team sport, that was what they did that season.
Mm-hmm.
Fall, winter, spring, and summer.
Yep.
And one thing, that's all they got to do. And I know that may seem limiting, but what that did is it taught them how to deal with some downtime. It also gave them more margin for their homework, their schoolwork,
yep.
because they weren't running a million miles an hour to every which, you know, activity.
Yes.
And again, that's what builds resiliency in kids. That's what builds, you know, the ability to navigate the ups and downs of life because you're yeah. given some ups and downs.
I bet it also gave you all time as a family to sit down and eat
yes.
together and have yeah. those conversations
yep.
about
yep.
this is what happened today and so-and-so said this and I'm so mad.
Yep.
And then you can talk through with them. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, tell me more.
Yep.
What was your part? What did you say? Mm-hmm. And I know some, you know, not everyone's going to agree on this, but I do agree on, it's kind of a running joke with some of you know, my friends of, so are you still holding firm on that no sports line? And again, my kids are younger. I'm mm-hmm. not saying we'll never do sports.
Yeah.
And we highly value physical activity
yeah.
And different things, but we need that time.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's just for us mm-hmm. what works is, but it's no, I want us to eat together as a family.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is so annoying. It is so hard. I don't want to talk to them anymore. And I mean, every parent knows that. But
that's also where you can teach manners.
Yes, it's manners. And yes. it's, you know what? This is yeah. the time that we have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the time, you know, in 10 years, I get like our relationship will change. This is my opportunity now to, even if, yes, I kind of wish we weren't doing this sometimes. This is hard.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that you would stop touching that or please, you know, stop picking your feet. Why are you picking your feet at the dinner table? It's so gross. No, don't do that. But this is the time to build those relationships mm-hmm. and so that we can have those discussions.
And I will say, having raised 4 sons, we were very much involved in sports, but like I said, one activity mm-hmm. per season. And we were still committed to family dinners. And so the way we actually did that as the kids got to be busier and, you know, the commitment is more significant for a varsity player
yes.
versus a elementary player, right? And so what we did is we waited until mm-hmm. our varsity player was done.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes that meant that we were sitting down as a family at 7:30, 8 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
eating dinner after a game.
Mm-hmm.
We'd give them snacks after school and we would commit to that dinner time afterwards. And so you can still commit to family dinners even mm-hmm. when your kids are involved in activities. So I agree that's important. One of the things that I think that is important for us to also note, because I noted earlier that, you know, this whole idea of, you know, this Jacob Wetterling case, you know, really sent chills down the spines of parents all over America. And it made them want to hold their children closer. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, even if a parent is able to sort of take a step back and say, okay, that's the rare
yes.
situation. And we just need to make some wise choices for our children to have a little freedom so that they can have some ability to choose to go away from home for, you know, a couple blocks or whatever and
yes.
and experience maybe just some of the struggles that go along with not being right in the backyard at every moment, being watched by your mom every single moment of every single day. But then on the flip side of that, there has been pressure, social pressure to not allow your kids out of your sight. So there's an example that he shares in this book about two parents who were charged with felony child neglect in 2015 when they were delayed in returning home. And their 11-year-old son was unable to get into the house, so he sat and played basketball outside in the driveway for 1.5 hours. An 11-year-old. Back in my day, there were 11-year-olds that were babysitting.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not kidding. Fifth graders were easily babysitting for other children. And the parents, sadly, were arrested, strip searched, fingerprinted, and held overnight in jail. The parents were arrested for negligence, and their two boys were placed in foster care for a month.
Yep.
This is because an 11-year-old was
playing basketball.
Yeah, playing basketball in his driveway because he couldn't get into his house.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing happened, no problem, but the neighbor tattled on him and said, oh, this is terrible parenting because the parents weren't there. So then, of course, it's going to put pressure on parents to not let their kids out of their sight, to not let them, you know, bike to the grocery store, to the convenience store, you know, what have you.
Yep. How many parents have
such a battle.
Had a baby sleeping in the car? Okay, they fell asleep in their car seat. And I just need to run into the, you know, pharmacy or wherever for, I know I'm going to be 5 minutes. It's perfectly fine. You know, it's a fine temperature. Nothing's going to happen. We're in a safe neighborhood. And yet you go, yeah, but I don't want some nosy Nelly calling the cops because I just didn't want to wake my baby up, you know, so that I could be inside for 5 minutes. They'll be fine in the car. And that is a very real thing. So there very much are, it's a multifactorial analysis as to why our culture has gone the way that
and yet
gone.
We have to find that happy medium, because what we see over and over is when parents are anxious about their children, that gets passed on to the children, and the children become anxious. And what do we have in our country right now? We have the highest level of anxiety and depression in kids today than ever before in the history of, you know, having measured these statistics.
Yep.
And we know COVID contributed to that, but we were already complaining about the rise of anxiety, stress, and depression in children even before COVID came along. Mm-hmm. All that did was exasperate an already existing problem that was growing. And I do think that we need to help young parents understand that part of helping their children deal with anxiety and depression is to build resilience in them and to let them venture out, let them have to struggle. If they forget their lunch one day, don't go rescuing them every single time. If it's once, okay, maybe. But if this is a repeated pattern, you need to help them experience natural consequences.
Yep.
If they forget their snow pants one day and they come home wet, don't yell at them. Just say, okay, well, I bet tomorrow we're going to make sure that those snow pants end up in your backpack.
Yeah.
Right? And of course, the younger they are, the more you're going to help them. But when it comes to fourth and fifth graders where they can remember this, there's no need to be rescuing them and coming running in with the snow pants because, oh, I don't want their pants to be wet, you know?
Yes.
And so there's just a lot of examples like that, that I think if parents can help their kids struggle a little bit, their children are going to build that resiliency.
Well, and there's a great book. I know a lot of parents have read it called Love and Logic.
Yes. We did that with our staff.
Yeah. All the, you know, and again, it's just natural consequences so that kids, you know, the best teacher is failure in a lot of time, you know, a lot of situations. So that makes sense. But again, if kids always have an adult, whether it's a teacher or a parent or a coach, immediately coming in and being the referee or being the person that they can turn to because there was conflict of some sort. And again, we're not talking about true trauma or bullying where someone's right. life is in serious danger mm-hmm. and that it's, you know, we all need to use our judgment here. We understand that there's a difference between absolutely deplorable behavior where, of course, that's what adults are for.
Mm-hmm.
And this is part of, or just, well, she didn't talk to me and I didn't like it. Mm-hmm. And now I'm mad because she's talking to someone else. Mm-hmm. Well, that's hard. And I understand that that's hard.
And those need to be talked through.
Yes. And that's right. what they talked about in the book was that home should be the place, always should be the safe place to come back to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where you, but to learn to go out in the world and then come back and be able to talk to mom or dad with mm-hmm. whatever it was, either the triumphs or the mm-hmm. challenges, but building up, experiencing frustration
mm-hmm.
enables children to become more resilient.
And then the resiliency adds to their ability to be independent.
Yes.
And that's really the goal of parenting, is to develop kids who are independent, who can then go out, support themselves. They're not going to look to the government for help. They're not going to look to their neighbor for help, unless obviously they're in some really, you know, very difficult circumstances. But I mean, this idea of being independent
yes.
is so important. And we have, you know, it's kind of the running joke now in America, you know, how many parents have their 25 to 35 year old kids living at home? Well, that means, you know, and we even had a movie about it, right? The funny movie Failure to Launch. And we have to take it seriously and realize that developing those skills starts when they're young. I wanted to read a quote from a researcher at Harvard. Putnam is his last name. And he says, moderate stress buffered by supportive adults is not necessarily harmful and may even be helpful. I would argue it definitely is, in that it can promote the development of coping skills. On the other hand, severe and chronic stress, especially if unbuffered by supportive adults, can disrupt the basic executive functions that govern how various parts of the brain work together to address challenges and other problems. Consequently, children who experience toxic stress have trouble concentrating, controlling impulsive behavior, and following directions. But that moderate stress, buffered by the supportive adults, is what actually promotes the healthy development and coping skills of children. And so it's important to have that distinction in your mind that not all stress is harmful.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it's beneficial. And even, you know, saying to their child, you're having trouble with that teacher, you need to go talk to that teacher. If they're in middle school, you need to start having your kids self-regulate and self-advocate
yes.
and, you know, have those conversations. It deepens the independence and allows them to shine.
And this is one of the things that, at least historically, we are known for in the United States.
Yes.
Alex de Tocqueville, when he traveled around America in the early 1830s, so he was, as you can tell from his name, he was French.
Yeah.
And he traveled around America, and he was amazed with the attitude of Americans that when there was a problem to be solved, they got together and figured out, how do we solve this?
I love that.
However, he noted in his book, Democracy in America, that in France, people would just kind of wait around for the king mm-hmm. or the government to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The common people in France didn't feel like they could solve problems, that they had kind of the locus of control. But historically in America, we have, because mm-hmm. we've had to be self-reliant. And I think that most of us want that trait to continue.
Yes.
And we
mm-hmm.
want that in our children.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, now we need to, you know, myself included, think about, okay, how can we, with intentionality and tailored to our own family and our own kids, how do we help cultivate that?
Mm-hmm.
How do we, are we doing too much as a parent?
Yep. Yep. And I think on that note, we have to end our conversation here as we're down to a few seconds. But The Coddling of the American Mind, it's a great book. I highly recommend it for every parent and really even non-parents
oh,
as
absolutely.
Well. It's an excellent book. And you can listen to this show and others of our shows on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And follow us at our website, savetheclassroom.com. Have a great night.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.